Tonight's talk is about the threat to the West of Islam or the Muslim movement. Someone once said that a civilized man, if he can hold two ideas in his mind at the same time, a post-civilized man goes one step farther and sees nothing wrong with maintaining simultaneously absolutely contradictory ideas, and that does not trouble him in the least. The idea of maintaining two absolutely contradictory ideas comes to mind in the matter of Islam, and what in particular Clinton and the political establishment are feeding us today, but also the leaders of the One World Church. John Paul II and the American bishops are just right in link with the political leaders of our land. On the one hand, the politicians tell us that the Muslims who are in what was once Yugoslavia are bad guys and terrible violence and murder and carrying on. But on the other hand, the Muslims who are a little bit further east, producing petrodollars, are the good guys, and they're worth having a war for and defending. Even though, as I pointed out in the sermon not too long ago, the Muslims in the east, Saudi Arabia is the classic example, absolutely forbid any practice of any religion aside from their own. It is forbidden so much as to carry a Bible or a missal or a rosary into Saudi Arabia or to make the sign of the cross there. That's absolutely forbidden. So then you see there's an interesting contradiction. But because people don't really think clearly anymore, I don't suppose that troubles people all that much. Some say there is an inevitable clash between Western civilization and Western values and Islamic civilization and values. I believe this view is terribly wrong. This is Clinton speaking in 1998, appropriately enough, at the United Nations. False prophets may use and abuse any religion to justify whatever political objective they have, even cold-blooded murder. Some may have the world believe that Almighty God himself, the merciful, Clinton said, using the Islamic phrase, Almighty God himself, the merciful, grants a license to kill. But this is not our understanding of Islam. There are over 1,200 mosques in Islamic centers in the United States, and the number is rapidly increasing. The 6 million Americans who worship there will tell you there is no inherent clash between Islam and America. Americans respect and honor Islam. That's the idea of a tolerant Islam, which in the name of diversity is to be welcomed into our midst and just accepted as just one religion in the West amongst other ones, is the what you will hear either from President or from Pope. To those, however, who have the faith, or those who have a mind left, who know history, who know what Islam actually stands for, they realize that these two things are at the same time contradictory, the one to the other. It is only those who say would take whatever Clinton has to say at face value that could possibly believe something like that, false as it is. And at the same time, it is only those who have lost so much the sense of Christian truth in our own post-Christian age, that they could actually be proud to adopt an opinion such as that. That sadly is the case. That is what we face today in the United States and really throughout the world. The politicians then are joining the humanistic version of Protestantism, the humanistic version of Catholicism, and Judaism too, to establish a new kind of this one world church or a very comfortable American civic creed. Hillary, of course, did her part by having the Muslims over to the White House last year for the called Eid al-Fitr, which is the feast in which they slay a goat to symbolize the end of the Ramadan fast. But as you will see tonight, as I take you through a little bit of theology and a little bit of history, it is not a benign or a peaceful form of religion, not at all. It is something which very much does indeed threaten the West, and it threatens us. And because the ideas are contradictory, the one to the other, it will either boil down to them or to us. How did Islam start? It was founded by Muhammad, the prophet. He was what they would call today a camel jockey. That is to say that he took care of camels. That's what he did for a living. He was from the tribe of pagan Arabs, in what is today Saudi Arabia, who took care of the pagan shrine at what is today Mecca, called the Kaaba, which has a, what is in all probability a meteorite at its heart, a black stone, which the Arabs used to worship as somehow having come down from heaven. What Muhammad did was to take the basic paganism of the religion of his place and his time, and then simplify it, borrowing large portions of Christianity and a little bit of Judaism. It was kind of an ecumenical movement of his day. You would be told today that at least we have this in common with the Muslims, that we all worship the same God. That is false. That is not true. John Paul II is proclaiming that very, very frequently. He goes to Africa, for example. That is absolutely false. Why is the crescent moon the symbol of the Muslims? Because the Muslim God is actually the moon deity, or the moon god, worshipped by the people of that place, Arabia, in the 6th century, where Muhammad began his religion. He was simply called the God because he was the greatest or the most popular of their over 300 pagan deities. Al-Ilah, or Allah, that's how he got his name. The Babylonians had a similar kind of a pagan deity that they worshipped, the idea of worshipping the moon god. So the crescent, which you see on the mosque, which isn't too far from here, is actually a symbol of the moon god. So he took the moon god, Muhammad did. He got rid of all the lesser deities. For a while, there was some question about whether or not the three daughters of this moon god would be worshipped. And that's the reason why, if you remember at all anything about satanic verses and Salman Rushdie and the all that big carrying on with the liberals that Khomeini said he was to be put to death, the reason for that was that he exposed the history of the Mohammedan religion, saying that the people, that for a long time it was seriously taken that you would also worship these three goddesses. But then later on, Muhammad himself abolished that and said that was only a temptation from the devil, or satanic temptation, which was the name of this Rushdie's book. The central place of worship of the Mohammedans today is the same as the pagans of Arabia in that time. The Kaaba, as I explained, or the cube, which is probably a meteorite, the one of the five duties of Muslims in carrying out their responsibilities to get to paradise, which will be a sensual paradise of every kind of a physical or sensual delight, is to make a pilgrimage at least once in their lifetime to Mecca in Arabia. And Mecca is a closed city. It is a city to which only Mohammedans are allowed access under pain of death. There are a number of ceremonies which take place during the course of this pilgrimage, which are actually pagan rites, such as stoning the devil in a certain place, and the partaking of the waters of a certain well, as again, once again, rites that were performed when the whole of the area was pagan. Taking the essential paganism, then he borrowed some of the ideas of Christianity, but in a heretical or extremely simplified way. Chesterton or Belloc maintained that Mohammedanism is actually a Christian heresy. Other writers today maintain that Mohammedanism is actually just paganism. So So you take your pick. There are actually two theories about it. In any case, there is a kind of a connection between a little bit, you might say, the Protestant spirit of extreme simplification and doing everything based upon the book, in this case the Koran, and Mohammedanism. They carry their simplification so far that they deny the doctrine of the Trinity. They deny the doctrine of the Incarnation. They have a great hatred for the concept of the Incarnation, that God became a man. They believe in a series of prophets, and that our Lord was just a prophet, although they have a certain veneration for him and a certain veneration for the Virgin Mary. Interesting to note that the Quran actually has some indication of the Immaculate Conception. The doctrine of the Immaculate Conception is alluded to in some of the verses of the Quran, which shows that that was current, that was believed in the 6th century, of course, because it goes back to our Lord's own revelation. So he took Christian and, in a certain sense, Jewish ideas and simplified them as much as possible, reduced his religion to about 5 basic points. The idea of making the pilgrimage to Mecca once in your lifetime, the idea of praying 5 times a day facing Mecca, the idea of that there is no god but Allah, this moon god whom they worship, and that Muhammad is their prophet. They also have the obligation to fast, a very strict Lenten fast, once a year for a month, for a lunar month. The Muslims have already had, I think, their Ramadan this year. They follow the lunar calendar, so it varies very much in the time of year. But that he got from the Christians of the time. The if you ever read about the fast, it's an admirable thing if you think how the Muslims fast all day long without eating or drinking anything until the sun sets. That, in the 6th, 7th century, when Muhammad started his religion, that was how Christians fasted. That's how you kept Lent. You didn't eat or drink anything all day long until the sun set. And so he just borrowed the idea from them. The church, because of changing conditions and a certain compassion for human weakness, eventually modified the Christian fast down throughout the centuries. So now we are actually allowed to eat 3 meals. But in the 7th century, Muhammad was composing his religion. That was not known. Muhammad simply borrowed the Christian fast. So I say you have to have a certain grudging admiration. I remember reading a couple of years ago about, because there are so many Muslims in this country now, Muslim teenagers, kids in high school on a basketball team, keeping the fast. And it's an admirable thing to see anyone stand up for his religion, especially young people today who are not afraid to be made fun of. Another thing is that there's some variation in custom, but there is the obligation, generally speaking, of a Muslim woman to have her head covered when she goes out in public. And there's a big to-do in France about whether or not the ragheads, as they're called, would be allowed into the public schools of France because of that. I think finally they were permitted, but they're very persecuted. They're very looked down upon. That's an interesting thing. They have then a very simple but a very strict religion, and they cleave to it. I remember Archbishop Lefebvre saying, "It is almost impossible to convert a Muslim." And he was a missionary in Muslim countries in Africa for many, many years of his life. It's almost impossible to bring a Muslim to Christianity. So the whole idea is a very simplified religion with a tremendous amount of carnal appeal. I've given you their description of heaven. Like Martin Luther, Muhammad removed marriage as a sacrament, made it to be simply a civil contract, made divorce extremely easy, and put it all under the power of the state. It's well known, of course, that the Muslim men are allowed to practice polygamy, to have many wives. That's something I presume they don't practice in this country, but they are certainly allowed to practice that in their own homeland. That's another aspect of it. There are two Muslim terms that come up a lot. You may see the terms in the paper. Jihad, which is their sacred war. Muslims are obliged, despite what Clinton may tell you, Muslims are obliged by their religion to wage a jihad, a sacred war, to spread their faith and their culture. And when their sacred war runs its course, then there is the Sharia, which is the Muslim law which is imposed on the place. Within 100 years of Muhammad's death, almost the start of the 8th century, Mohammedanism had spread from the Levant, from the Holy Land, Arabia, the Holy Land, all across the top of Africa, across the Straits of Gibraltar, up into Spain, through Spain, which at that time had a Visigothic kingdom, and to France. It was only at at Tours that the Mohammedans were stopped by Charles Martel in the year 732. About 700 years, 1,000 years later, the Mohammedans made the last of their incursions against Christianity at the gates of Vienna. Remember the number of feast days that we have, the feast day of the Holy Name of Mary in particular, celebrate these victories. So in order to get some understanding of what Mohammedanism is, you have to see what they have done to Europe. But the only country that really was able successfully to get rid of them and to reclaim itself as a Christian country was Spain. And the church was so grateful to the Spanish for all that they did in driving the Muslims out of Spain, their long history of those crusades led by St. James the Apostle, is the traditional leader of the anti-Mohammedan forces in Spain. The Spanish refer to him as El Señor Santiago Apostol El Matamoro, the Lord Apostle James, the Moor Killer, the Moor Slayer. This is a wonderful statue you see in Mexico of St. James on a horse killing a Moor, killing a Muslim under his foot. One church I visited has a big statue like right over the altar. It's a bit of a distraction. But it shows a little bit what the church has had to do in order to survive. Spain's the only country. For that, out of gratitude, the church dispensed the Spaniards in the 15th century. In the year 1492, when the reconquest was complete, the Spaniards were dispensed from the Friday abstinence, except during Lent, which is why if you go to a Spanish country outside of Lent, you can eat meat on Friday. Mexico is a good example of that. So there was a the swath they cut, and I read in my research for this lecture that public school texts now teach children in America that the different countries, for example, Syria or Egypt, invited the Muslims to come in and to reform their civilization, their religion for them. That's not true. The Muslims came in and they destroyed the culture which they found, they're replacing it with their own. There's a great classical library at Alexandria with thousands of volumes going back to the ancient Greeks that was burned down to the ground by the Muslims. And the Christians were always reduced to a small minority. The reason why there is so much grief and trouble today in the Balkans is simply this, that the Turks took over that part of the world, what we consider today more or less still Yugoslavia. The Turks took over that part of the world, and some of the Slavs, or the Serbs who lived there, refused to become Muslims, and some agreed to become Muslims. And that's the whole of the tale. And have merrily killed each other for centuries and centuries. So you have to have some concept of the terrible, bloody history of that place. The American press never tells you about the Muslim atrocities or the fact that the leader whom we have established in Bosnia today has said that there is no getting away from the absolute imposition of the Muslim rule and Muslim culture on the world. So that's our duty, and that's what we will do. So, I mean, it's hardly sort of a secular, post-religious, ecumenical age that they're promoting. Not at all. That would be a mistake for anyone to feel that is the case. You have to see what's going on in Yugoslavia today as yet another example of this Muslim assault. There's another interesting example of the Muslim assault, which is going on in our own country, which affects us much more. Certain textbooks or the press, that's a certain amount of problem there. But Clinton referred to there being now 1,200, which is a lot, Muslim mosques or centers throughout our land. If you've ever driven up towards Toledo on 75, you see rising out of the cornfield is the eerie sight of a mosque and a minaret. Eerie, because you know what that religion stands for. You know how it has tried to crush out Catholicism, Christianity, over and over again. It is interesting to note that recently Muslims, the Saudi Arabians in particular, because they're the ones that funded it, received permission to build a huge school in a suburb right outside of Washington, D.C., which has a dormitory complex, a mosque, and all the rest of it, entirely paid for and ruled or governed by the Saudi Arabian government. So in effect, it becomes extraterritorial. And here, all of the Muslim doctrine is being taught. including the idea of an absolute intolerance for Christianity. And it's only a few miles from our capital. I think I read, I wanted to look it up, but some of you may remember, I think I read, there was an article about the Muslims in the tri-state area recently, that they are the fastest growing religion in the tri-state area. It's the Muslim religion. What a thought. Think of that, what that means. What does that mean in terms of logistics? How are the Muslims going to win? The Muslims are going to win if they win. The same way, in a sense, that the Roman Empire was infiltrated and finally fell. There's a long German term for it, Volks something or another, which means simply the peoples coming in by means of immigration, the immigration of Muslims into our land. Eventually, why is that? Because the Muslims are the only ones anymore who are having children. No one else has any children. Everyone else has 2.3 kids. And the Muslims have zillions of kids. Of course, you know, naturally with several wives, that's, I suppose, to be expected. You see that already, and it's a startling thing. You see that already in France, in Belgium, in Germany, in Italy, in England. All of these places which are post-Christian, just have a little remnants of Novus Ordo religion. You see all the beautiful churches. Father Stiordia was entertaining me last night at supper. We were discussing this with tales about the Muslims. Our chapel in Turin, Italy, which I dedicated a couple of years ago, it happens to be near the train station in a very, very highly Muslim area, and how very aggressively there's a lot of prostitution and drugs there, all done by Muslims. Imagine this is Italy. Supposed to be a Catholic, it's supposed to be full of Italians, but it's not anymore. It's full of the ragheads, and some of them were aggressively begging and insisting that these priests and their Catholics give them money. And one man in particular wouldn't take no for an answer, and he finally said, "Death to the Christians! Death to the Christians!" He's trying to get the rest of the Muslims on the street to come over and have a little riot, and possibly indeed to put them to death. It is a scary thought. Or how the Muslims in many countries, Father mentioned Belgium in particular, which is his experience, the Muslims with the government in cahoots and, of course, the real estate agent, engage in the blockbusting, which I remember from a number of years ago in Detroit, how the realtors would bring in black families, just one or two, then they would go around, tell everyone else in the neighborhood that the blacks are moving in, the price of the house would go down, the people would panic and move out. That's exactly what they do in Belgium with the Muslims, and no one wants to live in a Muslim neighborhood because of the crime, and they want to live with their own fellow Christians or post Christians at least. So entire neighborhoods go Muslim, and more Muslims are coming in. They say that God, there is some justice in all of this. They say that eventually Israel will have more Muslims in it than Jews for the same reason, because most of the Zionists are godless. And there's a small group of the very observant Jews, who have big families, of course, the Hasidim, but the vast majority of them are godless Zionists, socialists, and they follow the same thing as the West. They don't have any kids anymore. It's all birth control. So because of that, they're eventually, just by demographics, they're going to take over. By demographics, they will take over. That's an interesting thought. Secondly, they will take over by means of a certain prestige and influence. You have Clinton doing his level best. On the one hand, you have the Pope, on the other hand, saying we all worship the same God, which is not true. Which is not true. It is true that many parts of their religion are a heresy of Christianity, but the essence of it is the worship of the moon god. That's why you see the crescent. That's why it's a symbol. That's something you have to keep in mind. It is interesting to note, though, that many of the Muslims who come in to the United States are very educated people and professional people. Therefore, they have an entree, an entrance to a certain amount of prestige and wealth sooner or later as they get themselves established. That means that they will have a corresponding influence in our communities, on our laws. The Muslim religion does not change. They've never had a council. They have no Novus Ordo. No one wants to change. Anybody wants to change, you put them to death. That's pretty much understood. And there's no fooling around there. They're really serious about that stuff. Someone was complaining about when they wanted to build that school in Virginia a year or two ago. Some people were complaining about the prejudice as the Washington Post was inveighing against religious intolerance, and some woman put a sign in her window, "Islam is welcome here." Well, I wonder if Islam actually took over with its laws, if she would still consider it to be welcome. Ugly statements have been made, running the range of mean-spiritedness, sniffed the Post, with some residents asserting that the school should be rejected because the Saudis, quote, execute their own people who convert from Islam. But as a matter of fact, our own State Department, in a report on human rights, said that, yes, the Saudis execute their own people who convert from Islam. That's the truth. So we are allowing them in to spend their money to build their mosques, to attempt to make converts. That's a whole other question. That's very much part of their religion, too. But usually they make converts at the point of a sword. And in the meantime, in Saudi Arabia, freedom of religion, the U.S. State Department's report said, does not exist. Islam is the official religion for all. Everyone has to be a Muslim. Conversion to another religion is considered apostasy. And public apostasy is a crime under the Sharia and is punishable by death. There you have it. That's a little bit the situation of what's going on. And it's because we have no sense of history, we have no sense of logic anymore, and we have no sense of pride in our own country or civilization or culture, what made it to be great, that we welcome all these people in. And they are changing our country. I sometimes have had occasion to reflect traveling in Europe that this probably is the divine chastisement, is punishment God has brought upon these former colonial nations, because unlike Spain in the time of her glory, they did not use the colonial opportunity they had to spread Christianity. England, France, good examples. Instead of converting the Muslims, they allowed them to continue on their own religion. When the colonial empire fell, they allowed the ex-colonialists to come in, their hundreds of thousands, to overwhelm their own nations. So that's how the face of Europe is changing today. It's very interesting to see, and very, very sad. The face of Europe is actually changing today. Something else that one would have to keep in mind in order to understand properly, into the news reports about Kosovo and Albania and the Serbs and all the rest of it, is two other things that were imposed upon the Christians. They were known as the people of the book, and they were tolerated, as Jews were tolerated under the Muslims, as long as they paid a very, very heavy tax. They were taxed extremely heavily. There was a further tax which they were obliged to pay, which was a tax on their boys, and a certain number of boys from each village were taken to the Sublime Porte in Constantinople, Istanbul, and made into what's called janissaries. Janissaries is an interesting word. It's a word in English today. Janissaries is a very small elite group of soldiers who have no family and no background and only utter loyalty to the Sultan. And that went on for centuries. And that was so much a part of the culture of the era that still today, a Polish mother might tell her child who's being bad, "Be good or the Turks will get you." And that's a cultural kind of a thing, because that was a possibility. It was a pretty gruesome possibility. So in trying to balance and to understand all of this, you have to understand this history. What is happening to the West today is certainly a punishment of God's justice, because you might say that we had them. What we were unable to do by the military might of the Crusades, because the Crusaders lost sight of their lofty goals and became just bloodthirsty and greedy. The sack of Constantinople is a good example of that. Because they lost sight that it was supposed to be a holy war. What we could not do then, as they get the Muslims out of the Holy Land and free the shrines, was almost accomplished at the end of the last century. That under nominally Christian countries, most of all England and France, The whole of the former Islamic Empire was ruled by Christians. And Islam was almost dead. It was almost dead. It lost all of its intellectual, lost all of its economic, lost all of its military and political power. But nothing was done. Nothing was done to solidify that. Nothing was done to Christianize the people. Nothing was done to try to bring them into Christendom in any sense of the term. So that when the political situation changed, they were able to once again reassert themselves. And even at the low point of their power, they were still very much carrying on their blood war. The business about the true Holocaust, the true slaughter of the Christian Armenians in Turkey and Armenia at the end of the Second World War is a classic example of that. There was actually a movement at the end of World War II, because as I say, all these Christian empires were in control, and the Muslims were very much under the Christians, to restore Constantinople as a Christian city, and give it back to Greece and make it to be a Christian city. And that was unsuccessful because of the Western powers, they wouldn't have it so. But then to get revenge, then almost all of the Christians have been driven out of Constantinople, even though the Greek Orthodox have their headquarters there today of their patriarch. So there are hardly any Christians in that city at all. They've all been pretty much driven out. A few thoughts then on what we face today in the West, a little bit of the theology, a little bit of the history. Finally, what would be the solution? How is this thing going to work out? If God gives us life, as they say, if life continues, the demographics alone say that the Islamic presence in our country, and certainly in Europe, will grow, and in Israel too, will grow stronger and stronger. What was the classic approach? The classic approach to defend Christianity from the power of the Turk was the devotion to the Virgin Mary and the Rosary. The Rosary, which, as you all well know, has saved civilization more than once. The victory at Lepanto, the Holy Name of Mary, the victory at the gates of Vienna towards the end of the 17th century. That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen now because no one has a faith anymore. There's no one that prays. But you never know. You could pray that people will pray. And it's our duty to continue to pray and to preach the Rosary. Stranger things than that have happened. It may be. Because you see in society today, you see this, even in the Novus Ordo Church, you see this swing more and more to the traditional faith and practices and devotion. And I never want to be pessimistic about anything, and I wouldn't be pessimistic about a true spiritual solution. If it happens, it will happen because people turn back to the Virgin Mary and to her Rosary. That is our most powerful weapon. That is what saved us in the past. If we're going to be saved, that's what saved us again. However, from a natural perspective, what would possibly save us from the Muslims is, I think, that which has destroyed us, Christians, already. And you might say, well, it would be only fair if it gets the Muslims too. And it will be interesting seeing what's going to happen over the next generation or two. That is to say, the Hollywood TV culture. That's what's destroyed our country. Will these Muslim kids in our country, these teenagers who bravely, first generation, bravely kept the Ramadan fast, even though everyone else on the basketball team thought it was really weird, will they be able to resist TV and the Big Mac and the public education system in particular? Will they be able to resist these things? That remains to be seen. I rather doubt it myself. So I tend to think, finally, that the age of the in the West, the age of the great victory of Islam is something truly in the past, because we're almost entering into a culture, an era now of post-religion. It's almost finished. It's almost gone. And I believe that those same secular and worldly values, which are almost irresistible to people today, witness all the hidden TV antenna in Muslim countries today. And there's a tremendous market for videos, for movies and things like that. The fallen human nature of man is something about the West which appeals. And I think that's going to corrupt the East, I do. It's sad that it should come that way, that our defense should have to be that which has conquered us. But it may very well be. And what the final chapter is, that's entirely in God's mercy. But thank you very much for your attention. I hope you all got something to eat. I think you did. I hope it was good. And in a few minutes, we'll be upstairs then for the stations. God bless you.